versus the Commonwealth.
Yes, sir. Good morning.
Mr. Stewart.
May it please the Court, I'm Matthew Stewart, Hopewell, Virginia, on a matter coming out of the Circuit Court for Prince George County. Your Honor, this is one of three cases that have all...
Excuse me, do you care to reserve any time?
3 minutes, sir, please.
3 minutes.
You know, this is one of three cases that have been granted for appeal by this court. A companion is set to be heard later in the morning, and one was heard previously in the summer, the case of Brando Carter. The facts, of course, in all three cases, they will be very similar. Three gentlemen in a car. Mr. Roy, in this case, was the driver of that vehicle.
I take it you don't argue that the results in all three cases have to be the same, given what happened to Mr. Carter?
No, sir. Certainly, they don't have to be the same. I believe that the only issue that the court granted for Mr. Carter was the conspiracy, not the underlying distribution of drugs. But I would, of course, argue that the record was void of any evidence of a conspiracy, no agreement whatsoever. It would often be necessary to rely on circumstantial evidence, but I don't believe that this court can find any evidence of that in the record. Certainly no statements by any of the defendants regarding distribution of drugs. Certainly there was, I accept the testimony of the state police officer saying there was indicia of distribution inherent with the drugs found in the glove box, but I would scour the record and not be able to find any evidence of a conspiracy. So we then get to whether the court can find that there was evidence of possession with the intent to distribute those drugs by the driver, Mr. Roy, without that underlying evidence of a conspiracy. We look, of course, at constructive possession, his proximity to them. I'll, of course, submit that, those drugs in the glove box if it were to be found that Mr. Carter in that passenger seat was the closest person in proximity and possessed them. Of course, someone else could have possessed them, but I don't believe that's what the trial court found. In fact, I believe the trial court found that Mr. Carter, the passenger, not the appellant in this case, was the person in possession of those drugs. He was holding those drugs. The trial court went on to find that the other gentleman in the car may have known about the character of those drugs, but I don't believe they would have exerted any dominion or control over them in this case. And I don't believe the judge found that. In fact, he said that they were aware of it, but specifically that Mr. Carter was in possession of those drugs.
The gang-related charges, were those nullified or dismissed prior to trial?
Judge, they were heard a great deal at trial. Some evidence was heard. I believe the Commonwealth was missing some links in a chain and was forced to nullify during the trial because they were not able to sustain the charges they found about halfway through.
Was there any evidence in this record of three participating in the same street gang or enterprise?
Of all three of these, the Commonwealth was attempting to prove that. I don't believe that any of that was able to be proven. No, sir.
So how do you get around the enterprise theory that the trial court applied, that this was a common scheme and they had just divided up the responsibilities? One was the driver, one was in possession of the cocaine and the pistol, and the backseat passenger had the money.
Well, you kind of have to, both charges are playing off one another at that point. You need the conspiracy, the evidence of the conspiracy, to find that there's an underlying distribution at stake. But I don't think there's any evidence in the record of a conspiracy. If you were to then find that he simply was in possession of these drugs and had the intent to distribute them, then you need to find that the driver somehow was exerting dominion and control over drugs that were in the glove box in front of a front seat passenger.
Of a vehicle that was not his.
Of a vehicle that was not his, yes, sir. That's basically the sum and part of my argument, Judge. I'll be happy to step down and rely on my brief for the remainder of the case, Mr. Roy, without any questions.
We're game for that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll give you a rebuttal opportunity, of course.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Murphy.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Gene Murphy for the Commonwealth. Of course, we had to prove knowing possession and dominion and control. Now, with respect to Mr. Roy, I think that's the easiest. He's the driver of the car. He is in control of the car. It's not his car. It's the girlfriend who leased a rental car, one of the reasons being that he didn't have a license. His license had been suspended. But in any event, he's in control of the car. And this Court has said, if you're in control of a car, you're in control of something inside. Particularly when...
Was there evidence in the record to suggest that she leased the car for him, not just that he was driving the car that she had leased for herself?
I don't recall that there was, but I mean, the point is that she gave it to him. He was in control of it. There were drugs in it, and a gun in the glove compartment. And probably the most significant evidence here comes from Mr. Williams, the other, the back seat passenger whose case is before you later today. He is in possession of almost $4,000 in cash, which he is carrying on his person. He says first, I found it in the rental car. He later realizes that doesn't make a lot of sense. So he says, well, my girlfriend gave it to me. Well, once you've got clearly false information from him, I think it's clear that that gives the court an opportunity to find consciousness of guilt. Why is this guy lying
to him? For him.
Don't forget, now we have somebody who is dealing drugs. We know that he is using this money for this drug, the drug transaction. Well, we then say, well, who's in possession of the drugs? Is, of course, Mr. Roy is the main possessor, but they can all possess it jointly and constructively. And that's what we have here. I think
So if we have the man in the backseat with the money, and he's now given us two different stories as to how he got the money, so that could be consciousness of guilt. And we have Mr. Roy in the passenger seat possessing, with actual possession of the drugs.
So Mr. Carter
Is in the passenger seat with actual possession of the drugs. That may show the two of them are engaged in it.
I think that the defense counsel misstated the facts. I don't think he is in actual possession. The drugs and the firearm are in the glove compartment.
He just got the nearest proximity.
They're close to him.
Yeah, he's closest to him, but he is not in actual possession at that point.
Right, like everybody else,
would be in constructive possession.
But they're closest to him. The mere fact of driving a car without any other evidence, is that sufficient for either possession with intent to distribute?
Certainly, if he knows the drugs are there.
Right, but that's assuming another piece of evidence, and so I guess my question is, how do you get there?
Well, as I referred to the Pringle case, which of course is a probable cause case, not a sufficiency case, but the court said there that the officer could certainly infer that the quantity of drugs and cash in the car indicated the likelihood of drug dealing. An enterprise to which a dealer would be unlikely to admit an innocent person with the potential to furnish evidence against him. That is that you don't, and that's what the judge said. Am I to find that these people are driving down this road 1:30 in the morning and that they don't know about the drugs in the compartment? We have somebody, the driver is clearly has dominion and control. He knows, I mean, this is his. He's in control of the car. He has control over everything in it. He is in possession of that.
Well, we've never held, have we, that merely being in a car in which drugs are found demonstrates dominion and control?
I think you have when you had one occupant.
But we don't.
We don't have one occupant.
We don't have that.
But we do have the person who is in charge of the car. He is the driver. He has obviously more right to the car than the others. The car has been given to him by his girlfriend. He is the one with the authority to exercise control over the car. And then we would have to find that somehow Mr. Williams, who clearly is involved in this transaction, there's no question that he is guilty because of his possession of the money with his false explanation. He clearly knows that this money is connected to the drug transaction, so he knows about the drugs in the compartment. And I think from that we can go that, well, assuming that the drug transactions are going on in the car, then that effect, as the judge said, these people are driving around. We've got the Roy driving, we've got Carter handling the drugs, and we have the money being dealt in the back. They knew what was going on. It basically defies credulity to think that Mr. Roy, who's driving these people around, doesn't know that they are dealing drugs. He doesn't know that in the compartment in his car, there's not only a...
Where's the evidence that they were being dealt out of the car?
Well, I mean, clearly they were using the car for that purpose. I mean, it seems to me hard to imagine.
Where's the evidence of that, though?
Well, the evidence is that they have the drugs in the compartment.
And money in the back.
And all we can say is they are drug... I mean, unless we assume that they were taking both the drugs and the money from the car someplace else to deal the drugs, we have a situation where...
That's the point, isn't it, that we don't know where the drugs were being dealt, whether they're being dealt on some street corner somewhere, whether or not they were being dealt out of a house of ill repute. They were present in the car.
Yes, sir. No question about that. But I think the judge made the reasonable inference, as the Pringle case permitted, that in fact these people are driving around dealing the drugs. And in fact, Roy's driving.
But isn't the distinction that you candidly acknowledge that probable cause and beyond a reasonable doubt are there's a big chasm there.
There is a difference, but I mean, I think the reasonable inference that they permitted in Pringle would be enough here. If in fact that inference finds that people who are traveling around like this are not likely to have anybody in there who is in fact innocent. And of course, we don't have to prove that Mr. Carter was involved in the conspiracy. I think it's clear that Williams is involved in whatever's going on because of his possession of the drugs with
Tell us why Roy is supposed to be any different than what a panel of this court held with Mr. Carter on the issue of conspiracy.
Well, because Mr. Roy has a clear role. He's not just a passenger sitting in front of the drugs. He is, in fact, the individual driving the car around, and it's his car. So I think the fact
that... It's not his car, though.
Well, I mean, but he's in authority. It's his. He has brought the car to this transaction. He is the
what
one who has...
What transaction are we talking about?
Well, whatever they are doing. He's the one in control of the car.
But what are they doing? Again, getting back to the evidence of the conspiracy.
Well, they are certainly doing something.
We've got very suspicious circumstances.
Right. They are certainly doing something with Roy.
But where do we get beyond suspicious circumstances to establish a conspiracy for Mr. Roy in light of what the panel of this court has decided with Mr. Carter?
Well,
who has
and what they said in Mr. Carter is there's no connection, there's no evidence that he was performing any function in the conspiracy. We definitely know that Mr. Williams was handling the financial part of the transactions.
But his conviction stood with regard to the drugs.
Yes.
So all three. There's no conspiracy, but he's got the drugs. So how are we supposed to find a conspiracy with somebody that possessed the drugs when he wasn't guilty of conspiring?
Well, because what they said in the conspiracy decision was that he was just sitting in front of the glove compartment. That he wasn't actually in possession of the drugs.
But the law of the case says that he was in possession of the drugs.
Well, no, because, I mean, you could have a passenger step into a car and be sitting in front of a compartment which is closed.
But he was convicted of possession with intent to distribute a conviction.
He was, of course, also convicted of possession of the firearm. So, I mean, to a certain extent, those decisions are inconsistent. Because, I mean, if in fact he has the gun in his possession and the narcotics, it's hard to imagine how he is not somehow conspiring with certainly Williams and probably Roy to engage in the conspiracy.
Well, but that phrase that you just used, and probably Roy, doesn't have to be more than probably.
Well, I mean, I think it's clear that Roy was in possession of the narcotics. So I think it's clear that all three of them were in possession of the narcotics. And what they were then doing was traveling around pursuant to an agreement.
Have you ever driven a rental car without looking in the glove compartment?
No, not ordinarily, because that's where I would put my contract and all that.
What about the trunk?
Well, you'd probably put your luggage in the trunk.
What about under the spare tire?
I probably wouldn't check there. But I assume that the people at the rental car place would check everything.
But that's an assumption that could be made to your detriment if you're the one operating that car, correct?
I'm not sure what you mean, Your Honor.
Well, if some contraband is in that car and you're the operator of it, you're the one that's got control, it's leased in your name, not even in the baby mama's name, but leased in your name, and then drugs are found in that, how is your argument any different?
Well, I'm not sure it would be any different. In fact, the point
so
is
So you're
that
just stuck if you're just a renter that didn't thoroughly examine this car before you get behind the wheel and there are drugs found in there, whether you're a single occupant or otherwise.
I think this is a little different from one individual getting into an automobile and being stopped.
Yeah, that's the tougher case for an individual.
Well, I mean,
in a car and there are drugs found somewhere in that car.
Somebody sitting in the back seat who I think is clearly dealing drugs. Mr. Williams has money that he will not admit is his because he's concerned that he'll be found out what he's actually doing, that is selling narcotics. So, I mean, it's not as if this is an innocent driver who has no idea that there are drugs being dealt, that he has no knowledge.
We get to that knowledge merely through proximity, is that correct?
Well, First of all, okay.
What's the evidence of anything other than proximity?
Well, the evidence of knowledge is in the fact that the man in the back seat is in fact involved in drug dealing.
But how are we supposed to make the jump that Roy knows about how much money is in this fellow's pocket in the back seat?
Well, because the fellow is dealing the drugs, is selling drugs which are in the compartment.
But we can't put the cart before the horse. Very frankly, what is there to tie the money in his pocket to the drugs that are in the glove compartment? How do we know that the money in his pocket didn't come from drugs he'd already sold? What I'm trying to get to, though, I don't want to strain common sense, but what evidence is there that Roy, as the driver, knew anything about what was in the pocket of the man in the backseat, Williams?
Because, in fact, there's no question that he is dealing drugs, and the only drugs around
him. But there's only no question about that if you know what's in his pocket.
Well, but what I'm saying is that he's dealing the drugs. The only drugs anywhere around there are in the compartment.
Well, let me ask this question. I think that would go down the line that Judge Atlee's going down. Instead of, have you ever driven a rental car without looking in the glove compartment? Have you ever driven a car without searching the pockets of passengers in the car, without knowing what's in the pockets? I think that's the point. You're asking us to make a leap to conclude that he knew that he had the money in his pocket in the back of the car. What is the piece of evidence that allows us to make the leap other than the fact they were in the same car together?
Other than the fact that they're in the same car together, there are drugs and a firearm in the compartment. We know somebody is dealing drugs.
Well, we know somebody put drugs in the car. And we know somebody has a lot of money in the car. But that doesn't mean that everybody...
I'm not sure that... isn't it a reasonable inference that the money there is connected to the drugs in the car?
Well, it depends, because only if you assume the joint possession. But we can't assume... We can't draw the conclusion based on an assumption of joint possession until you establish that you're entitled to to a finding of joint possession.
Well, it seems to me clear that Mr. Roy is in possession. He is the one who has dominion and control over the vehicle. Now, to say that he doesn't know that the man in the back seat is dealing drugs because he doesn't know specifically where this money came from, sort of...
Or if there's money.
Well, in fact...
You've got to get to the fact that he knows there's money, not specifically where it came from first, don't we?
Well, I think what we have to do is connect that money with the drugs. And I think we do that because what are the drugs that he's selling? If he won't admit where this money came from, he wants to avoid, he's clearly dealing drugs. With this, these are drug proceeds.
There's not even any evidence, though, that the driver knew what was in the glove compartment.
Well, other than the fact that somebody else in the car is dealing drugs. I mean, that in fact,
Even if we give you the inference that Williams is dealing drugs and assume that that's an accepted fact, what's the evidence he did it in front of Roy?
Well, why else? I mean, as the judge said, why else are these men driving around with...
Hey, I need a ride home.
With the...
I just finished my shift at work, which turns out to be as an unlicensed pharmaceutical person on a street corner, but I finished my shift at work. I'm going home.
That might make sense if, in fact, you didn't have drugs in the car already. I mean, Mr. Roy is driving drugs around.
How do we know which came first? Mr. Williams in the back seat with the money? Because you said it makes sense if you did not already have drugs in the car. How do we know who got in first?
Well, we don't. We don't have any idea about who got in first. But we do know that Mr. Williams is, in fact, dealing drugs and that there are drugs in Mr. Roy's possession in the front seat. And we know that Mr. Carter was. All I can say is that we've got three people who, as the judge found, are performing each an element of this conspiracy, and that...
Except you can't say Carter was a part of it, because he's now been dissolved as a merchant.
Extract
Carter from the conspiracy, then where do you have the conspiracy just between Williams and Roy? Because you can't put Carter as a part of that.
Well, but you can demonstrate that Carter was in possession of the drugs and the firearm, and that, in fact, if that's true, then the fact of the possession of the money by Williams certainly puts, and Roy being the driver, certainly shows you three people engaged in a similar activity, each performing a separate part of that crime. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Stewart?
Yes, sir. Briefly, I think we get into a bit of an error if we begin to say that just because you're driving a car, you're exerting dominion and control over everything within the vehicle. If a client comes into my office smelling strongly of marijuana, I certainly exert dominion and control over my office, but I don't think that their presence at my conference table gives me possession of marijuana, even if I'm aware of the nature and the criminal nature of the contraband they're holding. Doesn't mean I'm possessing it just because I exert dominion and control over the space. And we get those two elements, the knowledge that it's there and the dominion and control. And I would just, on the possession with intent to distribute without the conspiracy, I would just point to the factual findings of Judge Lee that one is the driver, one is holding the cash, and one is in control of the drugs and gun. The trial court specifically found that Mr. Roy, as the driver, was not in control of the drugs and gun. I would ask this court then to, likewise as it did in Mr. Carter's case, reverse the conspiracy charge, and with respect to Mr. Roy, also reverse the possession with the intent to distribute, just based on the findings of the trial court that he did not possess the drugs. I very respectfully ask the court to, quite respectfully.
Let me ask you this question. I'm going to ask it two ways, when you like, when you want.
Okay.
If we conclude that there's sufficient evidence of a conspiracy, then there's sufficient evidence of possession with intent to distribute regarding your client if he participated in this conspiracy, because possession would be joint.
Yes, sir. As a matter of law.
Then I guess because there is no actual physical possession, the reverse would almost have to be true as well. If there's insufficient evidence to support the conspiracy, given the trial court's finding that somebody else was the person actually in possession, we have to find that he wasn't in possession if there's no conspiracy. It's all or nothing.
If I'm following your question, I believe I am. Then I agree with you guys.
Either way, it's either two convictions or two reversals.
I believe so. Yes, sir. Without any other questions, I'll just respectfully ask that the court found very respectfully Judge Lee's ruling is plainly wrong.
Very well. We'll step down and greet counsel. Then we'll take a brief recess and then come back and hear the case of Revay versus the Commonwealth.